At dusk, a man rows the canoe past narrow bars where tall grass grows. Later, he canoes past a snow-covered pier.
There aren't many really wild places left in Ireland, but on the Shannon River, you still get that feeling no one's ever been there before. I want to see this river in all its moods, in every season. Not just how it looks, but how it sounds, how it feels. I want to find the hidden places and the hidden creatures living there.
A blue, orange, and white bird dives into the water. A frog's vocal sac expands. White cranes fly through the sky. A squirrel carrying a nut in its mouth runs along a branch, then leaps into the air. A crayfish swims underwater. Several birds fly past tall grass. A bat flutters through darkness. A duckling slides off its mother's back. A red fox stares ahead. The wind ruffles a bird's fluffy white feathers.
I'm going to have no fixed agenda. Just want to wander. Wander and explore.
A swan dips its head underwater. Roiling water folds into itself. The canoe drifts through a narrow channel at sunset.
This river is a lifeline for countless creatures who shelter in and around its waters. I'm going to follow them, see where they take me.
The man canoes into the middle of the river. Ireland's Wild River. In a montage, a giraffe walks under cloudy skies. An elephant turns its head. A full moon rises near the horizon. Zebras stand silhouetted against the setting sun. Hundreds of birds take flight from a grassy plain. Nature.
Funding for this episode was provided by the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland, Waterways Ireland, ESB, the Heritage Council of Ireland, and the National Parks and Wildlife Service of Ireland. Nature is made possible in part by the Arnhold family, in memory of Clarice Arnhold, the Lillian Goldman Charitable Trust, the Philemon M. D'Agostino Foundation, by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and by contributions to your PBS station from viewers like you. Thank you.
Fog rolls across a river's surface. A buoy floats in the middle of the wide waterway. The brown-haired man rows the canoe through the mist. Atop the buoy, two birds with a ring of collar-like feathers around their necks preen themselves in the dawn light.
Early mornings for me are some of the best times. The dawn chorus comes and the reeds are full of bird song, and it's a wonderful, happy time.
A white swan dips its head underwater in search of food. A songbird perches on a tall reed. Ripples form on the slow-moving river.
It's a great time to be on the Shannon. It's time to find food because you've been building up an appetite all night. Time to find a mate. A time to declare your intentions. This is still my patch. This is my part of this riverbank.
A bird skims the water as it flies across the river. A spider web built between two reeds of grass flutters in the wind. Presented by Colin Stafford Johnson.
It's a wonderful, peaceful time of day. And the light. You're out there at sunrise. Sometimes the light is so, so special.
A seemingly huge sun hangs just above the trees lining the riverbank. Daytime. An orange and white butterfly flutters toward cream-colored flowers. Elsewhere, Colin sketches a butterfly in a notebook.
Spring on the Shannon. The great awakening. And there's such a sense of purpose in the air.
He strolls through a meadow.
The orange-tipped butterfly is one of the first of the season, and it's a real sign that spring is here.
The orange-tipped butterfly alights on a flower.
Just a couple of months ago, all this was underwater. And then the water recedes, and they sort of appear out of nowhere and colonize these watery meadows. They're the most perfect little creature. Their wings are so delicate, and the colors are so rich.
These must be some of the most beautiful natural wildflower meadows left in the country. Never seen herbicides or pesticides. It's just the way this rough grassland, farmland used to look in Ireland. The landscape really hasn't changed, but there is something missing. This place should be resounding to the cries of the wading birds, the lapwing and the curlew, and the ringed plover, and the redshank. But they've all gone. They've all disappeared within about the last 20 or 30, 40 years. Some people blame the mink for this emptiness. Ground nesting birds, their little chicks and the eggs have no protection against a predator like that.
But you know, nature tends to be more complex than that.
Baby birds crawl around their nest in the grass.
The real reason sometimes for the rise and fall of different creatures can be very hard to identify. Our countryside has changed dramatically in the last few decades, and I guess the river is just reflecting that change.
Yellow and white flowers sway in the breeze. Later, Colin rows his canoe along the river.
Now you can travel for mile upon mile on this river and never hear the sound of the curlew or the call of the lapwing or the whistle of the redshank. It's all gone. It's very, very few and far between. There are one or two places left in the river where they still nest successfully.
The canoe glides past tall, reedy stalks towards small islands where trees grow.
Now, these low-lying fields are known as the callows. This is exactly what birds like curlew and redshank and lapwing need to breed. And that is the warning call of a redshank.
A brown bird with red legs.
He says, "I'm too close." And it's a call that just says, potential danger. Await further instructions. Now, if I was to get close, if I was to get out of the boat, you'd hear a very different call. And that other call is a real warning. It says not only have we spotted danger, but we actually have to react to it right now. And it's a particular call they make, is sort of a lovely, fluty whistle. And that tells the chick to go straight for cover. They're relying completely on the parent's vigilance. People sometimes call them the guard dogs of the callows. I have a friend who lives in a remote part of the west of Ireland, and the only way to get to his house is on foot. And he can always tell if there are visitors on the way because he'll hear that redshank calling and he'll know there'll be a knock on his door 10 minutes later. So. I don't see this as a journey from source to sea. I see it very much as a wander around the entire system. I want to be on different parts of the river at different times of the year.
A flock of birds takes flight from the river at dusk.
I've lived in Ireland most of my life, and I guess the Shannon is something I feel I've taken for granted. I mean, this is the longest river in Britain and Ireland, and it divides our country in two, from sort of the wilder west to the gentler east. You have this feeling of crossing the Shannon. You know you're going to another part of the country. You learn in your geography books it's something over 200 miles long. But it's much more than that. The tentacles of the river fan out, and it's all the little streams and rivers that make it up. They come from all over the country, feeding into the central basin. This river has such a great sense of history. There are signs of our past all over this water system.
Castle ruins stand on a hill overlooking the river.
It reminds you of how time passes and the lives that were once here, and you have to sort of wonder, what will we leave behind?
In a field, deer stand silhouetted by the dusk light. A falcon clutching a rodent in its beak lands on a rock.
Will the monoliths of the Celtic tiger look as romantic as the castle ruins?
The falcon flies off.
I don't think so.
The sun hangs above the forested horizon. Later, after sunset, Colin rests beside a campfire on the riverside and gazes out at the water. A bat crawls out of a crevice in the steep riverbank. Colin wanders around carrying a lantern. The bat launches into the air and flaps off above the water's surface.
Bats are one of the most unappreciated of creatures. There are so many nasty stories associated with bats. When you hear these stories and you see the movies, it's always about vampires and giving them a bad reputation. And that somehow seems to get ingrained in our consciousness.
East of Ballymann, County Longford.
They are utterly harmless to human beings, absolutely harmless. And they're not just harmless to us, they really benefit. I mean, any creature that goes around scooping up midges in their thousands is a friend of mine, because some nights on the river you'd wish you had an entire swarm of bats accompanying you every place you went. We have about 30 mammals in Ireland, and 10 of them are bats. If only we could totally reverse the way that many of us see them and look at them as the incredibly well-adapted sort of ancient creatures that they are.
As a bat flies over the river's surface, its reflection appears in the glass-like water below.
These are the Benton's bats. They're known commonly as water bats, and that's because they are perfectly adapted for life on the river. If you look really closely, you can see the odd one just flitting by really fast. And what they are doing is they are hunting over the water surface. They are looking for little insects which are caught on the top of the water. As they struggle to free themselves from that surface tension, they make little ripples. And what the bats are doing now, they are echolocating, finding where those little ripples are coming from, and they can sort of scoop up the insects, either with their tail or with their feet. They have extra big feet, and they use those to just lift the struggling insect from the surface of the river. Flitting back and forth there. The bats themselves live, I guess, in a different world. They perceive the world in a different way to me. Although their eyesight is as good as mine, it's not much good to you when you're flying about in the dark. So as they fly up and down the river, they have their mouths wide open, and they are effectively sort of screaming at the water and waiting for that echo to come back. And that's how they discern their environment. That's how they see where they're going. Incredible creatures. Beautiful creatures.
Colin rows the canoe across the river as moonlight reflects off the rippling water. Daytime. Raindrops bounce off the leaves and petals of flowers and other plants. A dragonfly munches on a plant leaf. Wearing a raincoat and a backpack, Colin stands on the grassy riverside.
This weather's really tough on the creatures that live off the river. Now, this wind has been really continuously blowing now for over a month.
Warren Point, east of Locarno.
Not quite what I had in my mind's eye when I set out on this journey. I imagine those lovely, fine April evenings as the days start to lengthen. Just listening to the birds singing, maybe sitting by a little campfire, but for the last 4 or 5 weeks, I've just been huddled down like all the other creatures, waiting for this spell of weather to pass on. This year, this weather came at just the wrong time. There should be great hatches of insects, and not just for the birds, but for the fish and everything too. They, you know, everything is feeding voraciously at this time of year.
for nesting birds, it's not just that the parents might not be able to supply their chicks with enough food, but the chicks get actively hammered by the wind and the rain.
Hatchlings sit in their nests on the bank near the rushing river.
But then it'll be amazing if the conditions do pass. On the first sunny morning, the whole place will just come alive again.
A rainbow arcs across the cloudy sky beyond the river. Daytime. A mother bird drops food into the open beaks of her nestlings. Elsewhere, a baby bird hatches from its shell. White dandelion wisps blow from their seed heads and float around under a clear blue sky. On a tree branch, two royal blue birds with orange undersides mate. In the meadow by the river, the dandelion wisps float toward the ground. A mayfly flutters along the river's surface. Next, hundreds of mayflies flurry in the air. Later, Colin glides in the canoe on placid water toward a marsh-like coastline, shores of Loch Allen.
It's nothing like traveling on a river. There's just that feeling of sort of peace and tranquility. You can kind of drift in and out of animals' lives and they don't even know you've been there. You don't disturb them.
Fish jump in the water all around the canoe.
When I'm paddling my canoe, I'm just wondering what's happening beneath me. That whole cycle of life, things meeting and mating and breeding and things killing each other, that's all happening in the water, but it's something that's hidden to us. There's one fish that's found throughout this river system, seldom seen, but at this time of year, their presence becomes obvious. And that's because it's mating time. People call them the barracuda of the Shannon. It's very much the creature that if you were a fish, you'd want to avoid.
A long fish with a narrow snout and sharp teeth.
They're superbly adapted for their environment. They can move very, very fast if they have to. Any fish that comes within striking range has no chance whatsoever.
Some people look at predators as being cruel and this sort of thing, but it's really not the case. If you're an animal that's been injured in nature, be you a deer in a forest, if you've got a tiger around, a tiger will kill an injured deer. If it breaks a leg, instead of dying slowly, tiger will spot it and kill it. And the pike are sitting there at the bottom of the lake. They're just not randomly chasing any fish. They're looking for the ones which are moving a bit slowly or aren't doing so well. So they're maybe they're sort of like an anesthetic, or they put people out of their misery. They put fish out of their misery.
A pike swims through the water, then darts off. Colin pulls the canoe ashore.
People are always talking about climate and changing, and is it changing, and that sort of thing. And the natural world doesn't lie.
He trudges through the high grass and into a forest.
You can see an increase in temperature. Things are moving north and west all the time because they're able to tolerate living in those sort of warmer conditions that are now on offer there. So you get this gradual influx in species, and the Shannon is going to, you know, things were going to start being able to live here that couldn't live here before.
A large white egret spreads its plumage. Colin gazes up at the treetops. Egrets perch on tree limbs.
I remember the first time I saw egrets, it was in the south of Spain, and I thought they were the most exotic thing I'd ever seen. I was walking up in the hills and I came over by this little lake, and there were these beautiful, pure white birds wading around in the shallows. And I couldn't quite believe what I was seeing, and little did I know that within, I suppose, 20 years, that those birds would have made it to Ireland, and they're breeding alongside our herons. That's something I never thought I'd see.
Egrets gather on evergreen branches near a grey heron's nest.
There's something about herons too. When you see them sort of hunched up, they can look sort of a little bit angry, a little bit sort of fed up with life. The egrets are like the new beautiful cousins have just come along, and they're kind of taking their limelight or something, and they seem to put up with them. And the egrets, I guess, are just so much more elegant.
Everything seems very calm. It's as if they've been living together all their lives. The two species seem to sort of accept each other's presence, even though they must be in competition for feeding sites and nesting sites. My guess is there's so many fish in the river that there's no big competition.
Colin studies the egrets congregating on the branches surrounding the heron's nest.
Great sounds. One of the parents has just come in, and they're all just going for it. It's a real survival of the fittest. All the chicks have to be on their feet, as it were, and scrambling for food, and that's what it's known as scramble competition. You've got to make your presence known to your parents so that you'll be fed, because if the parent doesn't spot you and you start missing out on your meals, you'll end up getting weak and not making it.
A young egret trembles in his nest.
My fear is that little guy has no chance. No future. It's sad. Nature can be tough.
Colin walks on through the woods. A spider web glistens in the sunlight. A large white bird flies from its nest. Later at dusk, Colin rows the canoe along the river. At night, Colin sits beside a campfire on the riverbank, meadows near Cluain MacNois.
That's a sound now that's really rare in these parts. That's a corncrake.
A medium-sized bird.
I remember the days when they were so common. They were found in pretty much every field in Ireland, and I used to listen to them just a few miles from Dublin city centre when I was growing up. But now they've really disappeared from so much of the country. When you cut silage, you cut it early in the season. So when you have a bird like the corncrake that nests in long grass, it's just gotten to the stage of finding a mate, and then females sitting on their nest, sitting on their eggs, and that's when the grass cutters arrive. So they don't have time to raise their young. So year on year, corncrakes have just disappeared all over the country, and they happen very quickly. And here on the Shannon, they've been making a bit of a stand down on the Shannon Callows, probably because that land was used a little less intensively than other parts of the country. And unfortunately, they've done really badly the last few years. And I've heard this year that there's actually just one male left calling. He's calling to establish a territory, but to let a female know that he's about.
because if you're a corncrake wandering around in the deep grass, you can't find each other, so it's up to him to call in the female. And if there's a receptive female in the area, she should come and have a look at him. But it seems very likely, very possible, that there's no one out there for him.
Colin shifts a log in the fire.
When I go to sleep tonight, there's a good chance when I wake up in the morning, that little guy is still going to be calling, because the only thing on his mind right now is finding a mate. That's why he's flown here all the way from Africa. He doesn't know that there aren't any other corncrakes here. He doesn't know that there aren't any females. Poor little guy out there now. He'll be calling all night. All day too, probably, if he doesn't have any luck.
Colin sweeps the dirt by the fire with his hand.
Shannon's going to flow through this area now and not hear that call again.
At dawn, clouds speed past above the Shannon. Silhouetted stone markers topped with Celtic crosses stand outside a building near the river. The sun rises, revealing a graveyard and church ruins. Orange sunlight reflects off the fast-moving river. Colin navigates the canoe through tall reeds. Later, he sits in the still canoe and glances around.
It's like being in another world. Very peaceful, just the sounds of the reeds themselves blowing gently in the wind. But all this activity that's going on that's unseen. All the birds building their little platform, floating nests, sitting on eggs, chicks hatching. That's all going on now, all around here. Just by listening to the sounds, you can tell that's what's going on. None of the residents in here can see each other either. So that's why they're constantly calling, letting each other know where they are. Contact calling. It's lovely to hear.
Among the reeds, a reddish-brown bird with a black crest nudges eggs in a nest.
There's always one animal every year that sort of somehow gets into your mind and that just starts to fascinate you. And for me, it's been the great crested grebe.
The grebe straddles the eggs, then sits on them.
The eggs hatch on different days because as soon as the first egg is laid, the female starts incubating it.
A male grebe swims over with broken reeds and fortifies the nest.
Both parents are very diligent. They have these amazing parental instincts.
Both the male and female grebes tuck leaves and smaller reeds in around the mother. White grebe chicks with short black stripes pop out from behind their mother's wing.
The little grebe chicks must be some of the cutest chicks on the river. They're beautiful little stripe patterns, so different looking than their parents. Grebe parents will actually pluck their own feathers and feed them to the chicks. It's a remarkable thing to see.
A chick munches on a small feather. The male grebe brings a fish. One chick takes the fish, then drops it.
Beautiful birds.
The chicks crawl back under the mother's wing. Colin writes in a journal, Love those little guys. Next, Colin canoes along the river. On a level, grassy river shore, Colin kneels outside a tent and gazes at the Shannon.
Amazing how the whole world seems to have gone silent now. It's every year, and those is around the 15th of July or so, it's as if someone had just flicked a switch. The Shannon is no difference. All the birds just stop making noise. And that's because the breeding season is over and they don't have to sing anymore. They don't any longer have to defend breeding territories. They don't have to attract females. They've no reason to sing, and that's why they've stopped. Because it really seems to happen over a matter of a week or so. It just suddenly just goes quiet. Absolutely quiet.
Tree limbs sway in the breeze. On a branch, a blue bird with an orange underside scratches and preens itself. More of the birds perch on branches at the riverside. One by one, the birds swoop down, pluck small fish from the river, and return to their branches. Holding a small fish in its beak, one bird shakes water from its wings, then gulps down the fish. River Inney, Shannon Tributary.
The greatest angler on the river has got to be the kingfisher. They're just master fishermen. And they've got to be, because they can pretty much eat their own body weight in food every day. Most of the time, you just see a flash of blue. But to really see how beautiful they are, you've got to slow them down.
In slow motion, a kingfisher shakes water from its feathers, then dives into the water. The kingfisher surfaces and flies up. A kingfisher dives and resurfaces with a minnow-sized fish, which writhes in the bird's beak. In an underwater view, another kingfisher plunges into the water and snatches a fish from near the river bottom. Later, Colin uses a fishing rod to reel in a small fish. At sunset, Colin sits outside his tent and eats. Daytime. Bright yellow daffodils grow on the riverbank.
I'm starting to see subtle changes in color on the riverbanks. Autumn isn't far away.
The blue water of the widening river flows around small islands. In the distance, the riverbank slopes upward into low-lying hills. Sunlight beams through a forest. In the treetops, varieties of colorful birds perch on branches. Colin Colin hikes uphill through the woods. As Colin approaches, a young deer with short, straight horns hops away. Red squirrels forage for food.
Great to see the red squirrels around. The Shannon, which formed a barrier to people long ago, has been really important for the red squirrel in Ireland, because when someone decided in their wisdom to bring the greys here, the greys never actually managed to cross the Shannon. And so that's why the reds are still here. The poor little blighters, they just can't compete. It's not that the greys are physically fighting with them, it's just that they find the food quicker, and they'll take food that's still sort of raw nuts and that sort of thing. And these little guys just can't compete. And so the females don't put on enough weight, and so they don't breed. Earlier I found some pine marten scat. There's some sort of evidence, maybe they are able to catch grey squirrels easier than reds. Reds are a little more agile, they can get to the outer branches of the trees, maybe where the pine martens can't get to them. It may be that with the rise of the pine marten again, that greys are going to be disadvantaged and the reds might make a comeback. I mean, that would be great if that happened, and it just might.
In the trees, red squirrels leap from limb to limb. In slow motion footage, a red squirrel jumps from a branch and sails toward a nearby tree. Colin tramps downhill. At sunset, Colin canoes along the river. On the river bottom, a crayfish reaches upward with both pincers open as the canoe passes overhead. At night, Colin rows across moonlit water, Big Meadow south of Athlone.
For anyone who spends time on the water, they know that sound. That's just the sound of the Shannon in winter. That wonderful, haunting sort of call, the sounds of the hoopers arriving. The end of the autumn and beginning of winter is when they tend to arrive, and they've been chased from their northern breeding grounds by the cold weather up there. They fly south to avoid it. They come to the Shannon because there's a great big larder here to keep them going for the winter months.
Swans run through shallow water.
You don't have to watch swans taking off to see that flight doesn't really come all that naturally to them. They really have to push those bodies up into the air. You'd think that they'd be a bird that maybe couldn't fly all that far, but they can fly all the way from Iceland to here non-stop.
The swans fly in formation above the river.
Once you make a decision to undertake that flight, there's sort of no turning back, because you've nothing to turn back to, so no matter what obstacle they hit or what weather they hit, they just have to keep going. Be very, very pleased when they see the ribbon of the Shannon River from the air. Maybe they're calling because they're just happy to be here.
Swans approach a riverbank. Dozens of swans land and glide through the water near the bank. Colin sketches a swan in his notebook.
They must use up a huge amount of energy on that flight. When they get here, they're as graceful as when they took off. You swear that they just come from down the road. They're just looking absolutely perfect and pristine. Some journey to undertake. But one thing's for sure, when they arrive here, there's loads of food. They're vegetarians, they come here to feed on the grass, is what they like to eat, and there's no shortage of grass in Ireland.
Swans eat grass on land and in the water. At sunset, reddish-orange light reflects off the water and silhouettes a bevy of swans on the river. In a forest, the wind rustles leaves on tree branches.
We tend to spend so much of our lives indoors now and in cars. We may be losing touch with those sort of seasonal markers which give you a sense of the time of year and where you are. You know, our houses are probably as warm in winter now as they are in summer, and we eat any kind of food we want at any time of year. So those sort of traditional markers of the seasons are sort of disappearing. And in the natural world, of course, they're very much still there. They're still driven by the climate, angle of the sun, day length, all those things. That wonderful sense of a year, something cyclical.
A red squirrel forages for nuts on a tree limb. A flock of grayish-brown birds takes flight. Sitting outside his tent beside the river, Colin writes in his notebook, "The first snow of the year." Snow blankets the sloping fields and meadows near the river. In the trees, birds collect food. Ducks glide along the river. Colin paddles his canoe past a snow-covered pier.
This is a rare cold snap, and it won't last long. As soon as the temperatures rise, things will start moving again.
Ice thaws on the branches of a tree growing in the river and on the cables connecting posts supporting the pier. At dawn, Colin's canoe moves slowly through the sunlit water. Colin paddles past a rock where a large frog sits.
That's a great sound. Guess to lots of people, bird song is the first sign of spring, but for me, it's the croaking of the frog. Breeding season has begun. Male frogs, lots of them. calling to lure in the females.
Dewdrops drip from long grass blades onto a frog's head.
Males await the arrival of the next female. This is an opportunity and they want to make the most of it. Some of these little males have spent the winter at the bottom of the pond, hibernating there. It means that they're in position, they're in the breeding pond when the females arrive in springtime.
Near Newtown, Cashel, County Longford.
Females could be scattered out over this entire area. Something wakes them up. The same sort of cues, I guess, that wake up the males, wake up the females. They've been wintering under stone walls or under bits of boulders or under logs. And some of these females have to make this arduous journey across the land laden with eggs. Some sort of instinct drives them back towards these breeding ponds. And then it's the calls of the male that lure them in.
In a pond, male frogs' vocal sacs expand. Elsewhere, a female frog jumps from a rock and hops through the grass as she makes her way to the pond. The female frog waits by the pond and stares into the water.
Females, you've got to feel sorry for them, because all these males have only one thing on their mind right now. She's on the edge of the pond and she's thinking, oh, will I, won't I? And when she makes that final jump in, all hell breaks loose.
The female leaps through the air and lands in the pond. Sleeping frogs open their eyes. From all around the pond, frogs hurry to the female. Several male frogs climb onto the female.
And these little males, what they're trying to do is they're trying to grab the female. They have special pads on their little hands, and what they're trying to do is get into the right position. They will wrestle each other, and she is stuck in the middle.
The male frogs clamor for the female. One male mounts the female.
Once they're really tight on there and in the right position, they will hang on for dear life. And for the next few days, they will not leave her. Life for a female frog is not very easy. The other males sort of know when they give up. Right, she's taken. And then they wait for the next one to arrive. Love frogs.
At sunset, Colin sits near the river and writes in his journal. He gazes up as a flock of birds passes overhead. Next, Colin rows the canoe along the river. More flocks of birds fly over the river.
Every evening this happens. Small flocks of little starlings come together to form bigger flocks.
Colin sits in the still canoe and watches the huge flocks move in undulating waves across the sky.
Just remarkable how so many birds come from the entire surrounding countryside. They all make their way back to this one little spot. When those flocks start to
wheel just a few minutes before they actually hit the reed beds. There's just those extraordinary abstract patterns. From a distance, they could be, I don't know, a swarm of locusts or a swarm of bees. It's very hard to get a sense of scale.
Birds form a tornado-like shape as they swirl across the pink sky at twilight. Thousands more birds form shapes that shift as they fly together in huge flocks.
In many ways, this is the greatest natural spectacle in Ireland. It's just some sight. And the sounds of myriads of beating wings.
From the canoe, Colin studies the twists and turns of the fast-moving flocks. The birds fly on.
Amazing sight, just amazing.
Colin sits alone, silhouetted by the dusk light. Elsewhere, a droplet of water splashes on the river's surface. Colin canoes through mist-laden water lit orange by the setting sun.
My journey is coming to an end now, and I've learned so much along the way. I've experienced this river in every season. I've gotten to know its moods, gotten to know its creatures. Somehow it's sort of gotten into me and feels like it's a part of me now. It's no longer a river, kind of my river.
The rippling river sparkles golden yellow.
But it's our river. Its future health and well-being is up to us.
Colin paddles toward the sun as it drops behind the tree-lined horizon.
Thing for this episode was provided by the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland, Waterways Ireland, ESB, the Heritage Council of Ireland, and the National Parks and Wildlife Service of Ireland. Nature is made possible in part by the Arnhold family, in memory of Clarice Arnhold, the Lillian Goldman Charitable Trust, the Philemon M. D'Agostino Foundation, by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and by contributions to your PBS station from viewers like you. Thank you. This nature program is available on DVD and Blu-ray. To order, call 1-800-336-1917.
Nature, Ireland's Wild River. Directed by John Murray. Produced by Saipa Giblin. For Nature, executive producer Fred Kaufman. A list of other credits follows. Description made possible by a grant from the U.S. Department of Education. Description created by NCI Described Media.
To learn more about what you've seen on this nature program, visit pbs.org.
WNET 13.